Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Driving Mobility Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Landau. And I'm super pleased to have Zach Miller with us. Zach's an old friend, an old and dear friend, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs at the New York Trucking Association and has really unique insights that I'm hoping he's going to share with us today as to what's transpiring with the truck parking crisis, what's happening in New York to address it. And as everybody knows, truck parking is something that's very near and dear to Park My Fleet because it's our mission to build safe mobility hubs that are large enough to address the parking issue across the country. But we're one cog in the wheel of many solutions. And that's why I'm super excited, Zach, to have you here today. So there's $100 billion problem, right, that we face that impacts the U.S. economy, right, which is certainly not a paltry sum by any stretch of the imagination. At the end of the day, those costs filter down through to the end user consumer, and it makes the cost of everything we buy on a day-to-day basis more expensive because we have to move things around. And really, that's any type of good and services, whether it's lumber to build your house or milk in your fridge, all of that falls under kind of, Zach, your area of expertise, which is trucking and the movement of cargo. So can you update us on the issue, right? Before we start talking about solutions, update us on the issue that we face.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks so much for having me on. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you in general. And I always appreciate the opportunity to be able to nerd out on these topics. But yeah, I mean, you said it really well, but we do have to be honest, right? We are in a crisis right now when it comes to safe overnight truck parking. There are a couple of reasons why we're in a crisis right now. One reason is when the federal regulations changed to mandate drivers shift from paper logs to electronic logs, that wiped away a driver's discretion to be able to take a little bit more time to find a safe place to park. Now a driver, the hours of service are very, very strict, and we understand why, because, you know, drowsy driving is very dangerous. We do understand that. We also understand that they are professionals and that, you know, a little bit of discretion is something that has made sense in the past. They don't have that now, which means that when they are running out of time, they must find a place to pull over and park. And unfortunately, they do not necessarily, they're not necessarily able to find safe places to do that. So that's how we see trucks pulled over on the shoulders of highways. That's how we see trucks parked in residential areas, you know, things like that. And the ELD situation, while it was done for safety, has exacerbated this truck parking crisis. Another thing that has led us to crisis mode is changing consumer behavior. Most people are probably listening to this on their phone. The phone is now everything almost except for a phone. And people scroll through websites and they purchase things. It's not just Amazon, it's everything on their phone, and they have it delivered to their homes. And so with the shift to e-commerce, with the shift to same day and next day consumer demand, that is putting more pressure on our supply chain. That is putting more vehicles on the road. That is putting more vehicles in residential neighborhoods. And that is another reason why we have a truck parking crisis in this country. And the last reason I do want to touch on is, especially in your dense urban areas and places like New York City, is the cost of real estate. The cost of square footage in a place like New York is incredibly high. And that has two big effects when it comes to truck parking, right? So one is your retailers are not able to allocate a whole lot of square footage for storage because they will lose money and they will not be able to make their monthly payments to stay in business. So they come over-reliant on the truck, right? The truck is not just about the delivery, it's also storage for them, which has more truck trips where, you know, in more rural and suburban areas where the square footage isn't as much and people are able to, or businesses are able to allocate that square footage for storage, you know, you see trucks making deliveries a couple of times a week. In New York City, we have our members making deliveries, you know, 6 days a week because they're also part of that storage. And then the flip side of that is the pressure on industrial and manufacturing space, you know, to allocate more space to truck parking, there's not a huge ROI there necessarily in these dense areas. And so there's limited capacity there. So those are three really, really big reasons why, you know, as we sit here talking in the tail end of 2025, we have a national truck parking crisis.
Awesome. And well, not awesome, but an awesome explanation. And thank you for laying it out so clearly. You know, I don't think that everyday consumers, you know, that aren't in the industry are necessarily aware of how much this crisis impacts them and the effect that it has on Main Street and people's everyday pocketbooks.
That's exactly it. And let me just say, you know, because I do think that's such a really key point. And, you know, look, I try to bring this up a lot in conferences and meetings I attend. You know, there's a lot of pressure on our industry, right? There's a lot of pressure on, oh, hey, how can you do things differently? And I think we're going to talk about some of that today. But I do think it is important, you know, the consumer does have some responsibility here. And the consumer does have to realize that the choices they make, this is the impact of it. And if, you know, you want your goods, you need to be a partner with us in finding solutions to this and not just, you know, press a button on a phone and expect something to magically appear at your doorstep.
For sure. And it's an interesting dichotomy because, you know, the city councils, like you just said earlier, are not keen to allocate truck parking space and zoning. You've got, you know, big data centers that are coming in that are, you know, I don't want to use the word cannibalizing, but certainly eating up available outdoor industrial storage or things that are zoned for it. So, you know, certainly some competition, but not competition, right? I mean, it's from servers rather than, you know, another area of logistics, but still, you know, a weird kind of problem to have where in order to make it profitable to own and operate, you've got to do, you know, various things. And then in order to convince the city to allocate it, you've got to have the consumers on your side saying, hey, we need more industrial land instead of more parks, or instead of an area for a school, or whatever it is that they may be planning and zoning. And real estate, especially to your point, in New York, you can't just build out, you know, into the next frontier because there isn't any. So you've got to either demolish something existing or repurpose something else, which makes it tough, which certainly makes it tough. To back up for a moment, for those who aren't familiar, tell me a little bit about your history and your professional career and how you ended up in your position as VP of Government Relations at the New York Trucking Association. And what are some of the responsibilities? What does your day look like? What comes across your plate?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in and around this industry. So my father is a traffic attorney in the New York City area, but he covers, you know, the entire state and parts of New Jersey. And so, you know, I had, at a very young age, exposure to this industry and really exposure to the regulatory and compliance challenges that so many companies had. And so when I was in high school and I was in college, my job was to really, you know, do his paperwork, keep his calendar, did a lot of work on New York City parking tickets, which is, you know, I still have those battle scars. Graduated college, did not want to go to law school. So I worked for an energy consulting company for a few years. One of the things we did, and I know I'm going to be dating myself a little bit here, is we had a newsletter, a paid for newsletter that went out to oil traders. And every so often there was an article that I thought my dad would find interesting and I'd send it to him. And he said that he, you know, had a dream of doing something like that for his clients. And of course I told him that, you know, if they're struggling to pay your legal bill, I don't think they're going to pay you for a monthly subscription, but we could create a website, right? We could create a blog and put it up there for free. So we did that. So that was NewYorkTruckStop.com. We had a website, we had a podcast, we had a radio show. This entire time, I was a member of the Trucking Association of New York. And I got very involved in their government affairs committee at TANI, and I got really involved in the metro region. In fact, I helped create the metro region government affairs committee at the Trucking Association. So the board made a decision to bring on a full-time staff person in New York City. And so I transitioned off the TANI board. I was on the board for 4 years prior to joining staff. Joined staff as the head of the Metro region, which is heavily involved in government affairs. And, you know, as we're really growing and as an association, as we're trying to do different things in an association, the decision was made of, you know, it's going to make sense to streamline the government affairs programs. Starting in 2025, we really merged our state and our city initiatives under one banner. So, you know, that's where the title shift came, as I'm now the VP of Government Affairs. So it's been 3 years on staff at TANI, but it's been about 13 years involved in the association in total. You know, I love it. It's home to me. I love this industry. What does my day consist of? It's frustratingly unpredictable, right? So, you know, I will field calls and emails from members. I will field calls and emails from other trade groups, other business groups, other lobbyists, elected officials staff, community members have started reaching out about when they have issues, which is great. That's what we want to do at the Trucking Association, right? We want to be a resource for the industry. And if there's something that you think the industry should be aware of or something you want to talk about, we want to be your first call. Frankly, this time of year, it's conference season. So I do run around to a lot of conferences. I speak at a lot of conferences. I attend a lot. That's a lot of where that networking comes into play. I am a registered lobbyist with the state of New York. There's value in being out there and being the face of a very, very crucial industry. And so people know, hey, this industry has a voice. This industry has a place where we can go in need, and it is great to start to feel those calls, those emails. You know, there is definitely a little bit of phone addiction in this job, but you know, that's okay. There are worse.
Well, I think that's in every job.
Exactly.
So, in listening to you talk about what your day looks like, you certainly have your finger on the pulse and are in a very unique position to kind of tell us about some of the other issues that are facing the trucking industry today. So, In speaking about that, we know about the parking, we led with that. But what are some of the other headwinds that the people that you talk to on a daily basis are facing?
Well, I would say there's another major crisis in this industry right now, and that's the cost of insurance. And I know that we're not the only industry dealing with it, but the cost of insurance have just gotten astronomical. You know, this has been a challenge for a while now, but we have seen in 2025, we're in that crisis mode. So we have a company, we have members that have had to close their doors because they cannot get affordable insurance costs. We had a member, been around since the 1940s, you know, still family owned and operated trucking company based in the city. They have about 7 trucks, smaller box trucks. They really just service the healthcare industry in New York City. They did not have a major incident, but they were told by their carrier that they would not be renewing them. So they had to scramble to find coverage, and they were able to find 2 quotes. The lower of the quotes was for $400,000 a year to cover 7 trucks. We've had companies tell us that their insurance carriers basically gave them a choice of, we can keep you at the same rate, but we will cut your coverage in half, or we will keep your coverage where it is now, but we have to double your rate. Just really, really horrible, horrible things across the board. There are a couple of reasons for it. You know, one is the litigation. People see a truck and they sort of see dollar signs, pot of gold waiting to be tapped into. What a lot of people do not know is we have a situation across the country of litigation financing. Civil litigation is kind of used as an investment opportunity. There is an incident. The party that was harmed as a result of that incident is bought out of that case for the intention of getting the largest settlement possible for this investment group that paid them out of the case. And people don't know that. So they go through this entire trial. The jury is not aware that the aggrieved party is been paid out, that whatever judgment they render or whatever settlement is reached is not going to the person who was harmed, it's going to investors. And so, you know, we do believe that there has to be at least transparency there. Obviously, if somebody has done something wrong and harm was caused, that person or, you know, family must be made right. But to use it as an investment opportunity has become really, really problematic. And so we're trying to get some transparency laws in there. And also, you know, we do think that the state needs to take a look and to really get those costs under control, because it is making us non-competitive as a state right now. It is something that is affecting everybody. You know, you mentioned it with the truck parking, about how something that people don't realize, like a lack of truck parking, increases the cost of goods. Well, the insurance is like that too.
Do you think multi-states are facing the same insurance headwinds, or that it's more an acute problem to New York?
100%. And that's a great question. It's been a challenge nationwide. And it does tie in a little bit with another issue that we're having, and that's workforce development. You know, we have open positions and we're struggling to fill them. In many cases, that's drivers. In many cases, it's technician. As an industry, we're not talking about the technician challenges as much, but it is there. And it's going to really, really have ramifications on the supply chain if we can't get enough technicians in there to maintain and repair these vehicles, and these vehicles that are getting a little bit more complicated with technology, with alternative fueling, you know, electrification. So it is a highly, highly, highly skilled job. It pays like a highly, highly skilled job, and you know, yet we still struggle to find people. The driving situation is an interesting one, because we are seeing
my next question to you. It's like you read my mind. So I was going to ask about the driver shortage next, and if you were aware of any potential solutions.
It's really complicated, because we're in the freight recession, right? And we've been in this freight recession for a while now. And so we're seeing some unscrupulous brokers. We're seeing rates that are well below profitability. And so we're seeing this competition in the freight market that is causing a lot of challenges. And so, you know, now some of the larger, you know, LTL fleets out there are wondering if this is really more of a freight rate problem than unemployment problem. But at the same time, it's about safety. It's about making sure that when you are putting somebody with a CDL behind the wheel of your vehicle, that they understand the rules and the regs that they operate under, and that they will operate that vehicle to the highest level of safety. And finding those safe drivers has been a bit of a challenge. And to the point where, you know, we do have companies that are sort of opening up their own driving schools. And this is where it becomes really interesting, right? We're starting to hear from fleets that they really want to take people who don't have a lot of experience, because they don't want them coming in with bad habits. They want people who are pretty fresh and eager, and they want to train them their way how to properly operate that equipment. So the good side of that, right, is that if you do not have a CDL, or you really don't have a lot of driving experience, there is an opportunity for you to come into this industry, because that's what companies want to see. They really do want to train people. And so I think we are trying to make this a more attractive profession for younger people, to let them know that this is a really good family sustaining career opportunity, a career path. You do not need a four-year college degree. You do not need that level of debt. Yes, there is a cost to CDL training. And I think as an industry, we're starting to do a good job of providing scholarship opportunities for that. And fleets themselves are also, you know, they're looking at it as, hey, you know, we'll cover it if you stay here X number of years. And I think the last thing about that we're in a really interesting spot for is there is a lot more regional haul. There's a lot more local demand. There are a lot of opportunities where you are not on the road all day, where you have set hours and you are home at night every day. That's certainly more appealing to people. And I think especially the younger people, they grew up online. They grew up on video games. There's a lot more technology in these vehicles. They really are a merger, right, of sort of high tech, but also, you know, a physical product that you're moving on the road. I think that's an attractive draw to many people. And I think for those of us that work in this industry, particularly on the advocacy side of it, we need to constantly hammer out that message and to do everything we need to do to attract those people into the industry.
Absolutely. Well, you kind of gave me the problem and the solution on the driver crisis there all at once. It's so interesting to hear your perspective on it. Like, I could literally talk to you about the problems all day. And, you know, on the technician side, I think it's something that we struggle with as well, because we perform maintenance on our sites, and getting skilled technicians hired and trained is, I'd say, one of our big headwinds as well. To repair a vehicle and turn it around quickly and get it back on the road certainly is, you know, something that we've struggled with. Let's try to kind of wrap this up on a positive note. So with that, what are some of the encouraging things that you're seeing? What are some of the new technologies that you're seeing? What are some of the good things?
You know, this is not going to be short. There are a lot of positive developments that we're seeing.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, for sure. But we have seen our government takes some of these issues very, very seriously. The truck parking is a great example. You know, New York City Council has passed two, so not one, but two overnight truck parking bills. One to create off-street truck parking locations and city-owned assets, and another to allow on-street overnight truck parking in industrial business zones away from residents. The Port Authority has announced that they will be tripling capacity, the truck parking capacity at JFK. I think we're also starting to see some real investment in the industrial and manufacturing spaces in this state. So I think a lot of that is really, really, really great. From the electrification, you know, we're really starting to see some positive things in last mile and urban delivery. The cost of that type of equipment, I want to be specific, it's those lower class commercial vehicle equipment, is much closer to parity with diesel or gasoline, and New York still has really good incentive programs. The TCO in this segment is there. We have members that it's not just that they operate electric in New York City, it's that they operate profitable electric routes in New York City. And so that's been really, really encouraging.
Off-road,
you know, like the yard tractors have been great for electric, and we're starting to see fleets really begin to incorporate them in their operation.
On the electrification front, if I had come to you, you know, even 3 years ago and said, hey, Zach, are you going to see profitable routes in New York City with electric vehicles, with the cost of where electricity is and where peak demand charges are and everything else? And you probably would have told me no, right? So what are some of the other things you're seeing on the positive side?
If we turn back the clock to 2013, when Bill de Blasio was first elected mayor of New York City, one of his big initiatives was, and I guess still is, Vision Zero. It's the idea of taking serious road crashes, injuries, and fatalities down to zero. There are three pillars to it: enforcement, education, and engineering. Engineering about the way we design streets and things like that. The intent is never controversial. We're all in on the intent. I think the way it went about was a little bit controversial for some time. But if you look at statistically, we have seen the success of Vision Zero statistically. From the industry, though, here's what really matters. The industry has basically said we are operating under a Vision Zero mentality. So any fleet that's worth their salt, and this, I don't care if you're a single unit owner operator all the way up to a national carrier, it's about mindset and it's about culture. That's what it is. And we have seen the industry really come together and adopt this Vision Zero culture of safety, where, you know, we will find serious incidents and fatalities unacceptable. We will make the investments we need to make in our technology and in our safety program to ensure that we are living under the Vision Zero ethic. And the proof is, you know, not just that the industry is operating safer than it ever has, but ATRI, the American Transportation Research Institute, one of their standing reports is the operational cost of trucking. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, we have been in a freight recession. The ops report is not pretty this year, no surprise to anybody. But the positive, though, even with year-over-year operational losses, even with companies really, really struggling financially, the investments that have been made in equipment and in safety are still incredibly high. So what that means in the real world is fleets are taking revenue that they really don't have and still investing in their safety programs and their safety technology and ensuring that they have the newest, most efficient equipment that they possibly can. And that is where the industry is right now. And that is a great thing. You know, you might see a truck driving down the street, but understand that the owner of that vehicle, by and large, is making all the investments they possibly can into that safety and efficiency.
Awesome. That's super encouraging. It really is encouraging. As if I didn't get your take on autonomous trucking. And how far away do you think it truly is? Do you see it touching New York already? New York, from a regulatory perspective, has not really allowed autonomous trucks on the road. Certainly not like we've seen in Texas and in California and in other places where it's a little bit more autonomous forward. So want to get your take on that.
Yeah, definitely. My opinion of the autonomous is more of a driver enhancement than a driver replacement. From my vantage point, there's a lot of local deliveries and the driver does so much other things than drive the vehicle. And so that cannot be replaced. And so that really is is there a way to just make their life when they're actually on the road a little easier, particularly where there's so much distraction, there's so much they have to be mindful of. It's kind of an obstacle course in your more dense area. So are there opportunities to really enhance that? I think there absolutely are with autonomous. I just don't see it as a substitute for all the work that a person does behind the cab. And again, in a place like New York, you usually see two or three people in the truck because, you know, there's so much they have to do outside of the driving component of it. But longer haul, highway, you know, terminal to highway to terminal, I don't know. You know, we might see some completely unmanned vehicles driving down. But there's another issue that we haven't discussed that the industry is facing, and that's cyber cargo theft, where, you know, they are spoofing companies, they are spoofing bills of lading, they are getting into the routing software. It's a really, really, really big issue. It's a real challenge for companies, particularly smaller companies that don't have robust IT programs to monitor and stay ahead of. These crime syndicates are very well organized. You know, this is not some guy just like snipping a lock in the back of a truck. You know, this is highly, highly sophisticated stuff.
They're tracking where it's coming from.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the notion of not having a human guardrail, I think, is one that might be a little difficult. But again, we don't know. It's just like these are real world challenges that we're facing today. And as municipalities and states and, you know, even the federal government try to figure out how do we regulate this autonomous, these are things that they need to be mindful of. Because there's so much that goes into this industry outside of the person who's driving the vehicle. The person who's driving that vehicle is, of course, the most visible and one of the most important. But there's a lot that goes into this. And as you're sort of dictating policy and pilots and all that, you need to be mindful of all of it. Because this could fall through the cracks really, really quickly.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I think that there is a lot that, particularly in New York City or other urban areas where there's just a lot going on. You need one guy just to keep the truck from getting a parking ticket. You have another guy unloading the truck, and then the guy's going to circle the block. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on there. Then you need people to carry stuff upstairs. So I think it depends on the use case. And I do think you're going to see it on the highway way sooner than you're going to see it doing last mile. So I think, you know, over the road, interstate, you're going to start seeing it more. And I think that, you know, kind of mid-mile from, you know, hub to warehouse and stuff like that, that's where you'd also see that. The medium haul routes. My kind of take is if the technology is there, then the technology is there, right? Meaning if they've mapped things sufficiently and the software has all the LiDAR and the cameras and the visuals and every failsafe. I saw a Tesla, I don't know, you probably saw the video too, avoid a plane making an emergency landing on a highway, right? So certainly the technology, you know, has advanced, but there's certainly a huge long way to go. And then before I let you go, any final comments, any final thoughts? We could keep this going all day. We both have goods to move and vehicles to take care of and stuff like that. So we've talked about the problems. We've talked about the headwinds. We've talked about some of the exciting solutions. We've talked about some of the positives.
I mean, honestly, I think the closing statement is this is a really exciting industry. I know people, you know, when they hear the word trucking or even, you know, logistics, and I know that's why we had to rebrand it as logistics, right? Because like trucking talking wasn't exciting people, but it is incredibly, incredibly exciting. And there's so many different facets of us trying to figure out where we're going, from sustainability, electrification, automation, just even, you know, you mentioned warehousing, just the warehousing, the storage of this, and the amount that is processed through these warehouses on a daily basis. It's kind of mind-boggling. And so, yeah, if you have ideas about how it could work better, you know, come to this industry. Like, let's hear it. Because the fact is, we are long past the days of, well, that's how my grandfather did it, so that's how it's going to be done, right? We are evolving so, so quickly here. And there's so much opportunity for those forward-thinking people that I would say, you know, if anything that you and I discussed today, if you're listening to this and you find part of it even remotely fascinating, look for opportunities in this industry. We'd love to have you, and we want to make sure that we are moving at the speed in the direction that we need to go before, you know, regulators come in and sort of make these unwieldy type of rules.
That is a fantastic message, and I echo your words. It's an exciting industry. There's a lot going on. You're literally being involved in the backbone of the American economy.
Yep.
And trucking is what keeps business moving. Zach Miller, it's been so awesome to have you on the podcast. We'd love to have you back again. Thank you so much. Always insightful. Really, really appreciate you joining me. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.